This is Katie from the super awesome Torin and the Goblin, which everyone should go listen to. You're listening to the Training Dummies. With Rob.
Look, I've been a high elf, a banshee, and an undead high elf.
And Daryl.
But I've never been a night elf. I don't do bouncy.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 211 of the Training Dummies, recorded on June 7th, 2018. My name is Rob, and I have a bachelor's degree in networking and communications management. I have an associate's degree in systems administration. but I cannot figure out how to freaking work OBS to save my life. Daryl, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great now that we got these issues sorted out. But yeah, it's doing good. I'm excited to talk about our topic this evening.
I'm super excited. And you know what? Okay, so what? This is a follow-up to last week's episode where we were talking about Anduin. And that was super cool. But one of my other favorite guests during our Stay Classy series was Nick, Katie's counterpart from The Torn and the Goblin, and he did a phenomenal job with the Death Knight story. So we thought he would also be a super rad resource to come and talk to us about Sylvanas. So how about we get a warm Training Dummies welcome for Nick? Nick!
I love that applause, but thank you. I'll admit I'm worried because I know I did my homework and everything for the Death Knight one and I was all prepared, but like that felt like maybe... like getting my bachelor's degree. Sylvanas' history is like getting your master's or your PhD. I mean, it's so much more in depth.
There's a lot there, I know.
I know you, and I know what you bring to the table here, so I have faith. I definitely have faith in you.
This is going to be a long dissertation, so I hope I hope I pass my oral exam.
Well, now that we have thoroughly soiled away 30 minutes of time farting around with the stream and everything. Before we do that, Nick, why don't you just take like just a couple minutes to let the folks know like who you are and what you do, kind of like your presence around the Blizzard community.
I host two podcasts over at Mash Those Buttons that relate to World of Warcraft. One is WoW Talk, which is a general news show with Eric and Ray, and then the other one is, as you mentioned, The Torn and the Goblin, which I co-host with Katie. The Torn and the Goblin, that's where we focus on story and lore, and it's not strictly a lore podcast. I like to think of it more like a story podcast. Like WoW is an ongoing like show, basically, and so like as content comes out, we're reacting to the show. You know, it's not quite episodic like every week. There's no specific season to it, 'cause expansions and content comes when content comes. But yeah, so for example, in this case, this is very well timed. We just had that Sylvanas comic drop. Well, Windwalker comic drop.
I made sure I read it today just for this.
Oh yes. So we'll definitely talk about that when we get to the end of this.
I haven't gotten to it yet.
That's the thing about like any game really is you've got like the mechanics of the game and like oh hey they you know they nerfed a class or whatnot and so you got to break down and talk about that, but at the same time, you know, they do something to a character, it's like, you can't say, like, they nerfed somebody's personality or something, but they kind of do sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's two different approaches to the game, and I enjoy looking at it both ways.
I know, when you say nerfing someone's personality, I feel like Jaina got, like, this Westworld treatment. Maybe I don't want to get too spoilery, but, you know,
nice.
Like there's a couple characters in Westworld that got cranked way up. I feel like Jaina got that treatment, so...
Jaina and Urel without getting into anything.
Heard some about that.
Well,
too.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, let's get into it then, because I'm ready. I know a lot of people got hate for Sylvanas, but that is not me. So I'm ready.
All right. If you have questions or comments or want to find out what we are doing, we are active on Twitter at Training Dummies. Rob is at Rob Copeland. Myself, Daryl, is at Daryl_TTD. And also, if you like the show and want to support us, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Training Dummies. No obligations, of course. We're just happy that you listen. Why isn't that working? Oh, wait, I changed it.
Wait, what? What do you mean there's lore in this game? You guys actually paid someone to write a story about Raynor meeting Diablo?
We should swap stories sometime.
My story mirrors that of all orcs. A tale of savagery and redemption. Perhaps one day I shall tell it to you.
Clearly you haven't heard my story.
Oh, yes. I have many, many stories to tell. Would you like to hear one? $9.95 per minute.
All right, Sylvanas. Let's just jump right in to... where do we first see her?
Well, we first see her in Warcraft 3. But before we get to that, I kind of wanted to go back a little bit with respect to the Windrunners far as who they are. We know that the oldest... For the first ancestor that we have of the Windrunners is Talonus Windrunner. It's not really specified when he's there. It's just ages ago he shows up. And then the next ancestor of the Windrunners that we get is actually Sylvanas' mother, Larissa. And so Larissa is the mother. She is also Ranger General of Silvermoon. And she originally intended to pass the Ranger General mantlehood down to her oldest daughter, Illyria. But Illyria wanted to be more on the front lines than be a general. Instead of being, back and playing defense, Illyria wanted to be out sort of in the front. So she declined being Ranger General. And that's how Sylvanas ultimately becomes Ranger General. It's not quite clear when Sylvanas picks up being Ranger General from Larissa. Larissa's killed sometime early in Warcraft 2. It's not really determined when. But it's during the ongoing skirmishes around Quel'Thalas when the Amani trolls and the Horde, who had united with them, are attacking the region at the time. Larissa's killed in one of those battles. Also, Sylvanas' younger brother, Lirath, is also killed around that time as well. And that just leaves Sylvanas, Illyria, and then their youngest sister, Varisa. They're the three Windrunner sisters. Who go on to do many important things throughout the game, and also feature in the comic that we'll get to. So that's the Windrunner family that we know today. And there's the three of them. And so Sylvanas, of the three of them, she becomes Ranger General of Silvermoon sometime around the Second War. And the real noteworthy thing around that time is that... Well, I guess it's more after... Well, it's... It's sometime around the Second War that she recruits she recruits Nathanos Maris, who's a human that she met and the only human that she trusted enough to bring into the Farstrider. So she recruits Nathanos into the Farstriders, and there's allegations and rumors that the two of them were having some kind of relationship, which it might be the kind of thing where they were both so into being like ranger hunters that they just got along very well, and that would have led to a relationship. I don't think it's that she was hooking up with this guy and then decided, oh, hey, why don't you come in and be a Farstrider? This actually was looked down upon by Kael'thas, Kael'thas Sunstrider, who was, the king of the High Elves at the time. And he asked Sylvanas to dismiss Nathanos, and she declined his request. So Nathanos is the one human who made it into the Farstriders, and he served there. Going into the Third War. And the Third War, that's really where we get to know Sylvanas, because that's Warcraft 3, which we all play. And basically the whole thing there is that everything's going great in Silvermoon, and then Arthas, now a Death Knight under the control of the Lich King, not the Lich King yet, shows up looking to use the Sunwell to resurrect Kael'thuzad. And he basically... comes up through Quel'Thalas, and Sylvanas comes out and basically tells him, like, go away. And he's like, no, I need to do this. And so she heads back to her position where she's running, being general, leading everything. And Arthas is just marching his way up Quel'Thalas slowly, but he's taking heavy losses because Sylvanas is a good general. She's running a good defense, but the scourge is just overwhelming. And ultimately, he's pushing closer and closer to Silvermoon, and then finally Sylvanas realizes, like, we can't let him get to the city. We need to make our last stand here at Airbreeze Village. And so she pulls all her Farstriders who are left, together with her, and they try to make their last stand, and she winds up in one-on-one conflict with Arthas, and he pierces her with Frostmourne, and she lays there dying, and she basically says, I'm dying, I need, just kill me now and end this. And he's like, no. He's like, I when I showed up here, you told me to go away. I said, I came here for the Sunwell, but you didn't go away and you made my life very hard. And he's very upset with the fact that, that she, that he had to work so hard to get there. He's like, no, this is personal now. And right. So he decides that he's going to ransack Silver Moon, and also he's going to torture her before he kills her. And he basically tortures her until she dies, and then right when she dies and she thinks she's finally free, he pulls her soul back and turns her into a banshee. And now, as a banshee, she is completely under Arthas's control, but she's still conscious of what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And so she sees, you know, as she's attacking her fellow night elves, her fellow high elves, as she's attacking them and helping Arthas claim the Sunwell, she's aware that she's doing. So she's forced to kind of sit there like a passenger and suffer this torture of doing that. And she's able to talk a little bit and give Arthas some attitude, but ultimately it doesn't amount to anything because he can order her to do whatever and she has to go do it like a puppet. And so that's how she's stuck suffering as a banshee during that
time. See, I never played through Warcraft 3 or not all of it. I played some of it before World of Warcraft came out. So I didn't know all of this story beforehand, and even if I had at the time completed the game, I never played it for the story like this. Like, I never understood the stories that were in these games until way, way later, even like years after playing World of Warcraft. But I did read Arthas, and that was a fantastic book, and I remember it talks about all of this with Sylvanas that you're mentioning now. So yeah, I remember reading all of that. So yeah, I did get some of that story from the book rather than the game.
Well, that's one of the nice things about Warcraft is you can get the story in multiple places, and for some of it, they know the more important stuff. They show it to you in multiple places in multiple ways. And I mean, even as far as when Sylvanas is turned to a banshee, one of the things that there's different stories to how that exactly happened. I know that Ronan has one account of how that happened. Mm-hmm. This is supposedly the true account of how Arthas tortured her. I think there's one other story. So I think that in itself is probably there's slight differences in all the media and where it's told. And it's sort of what version you choose to believe as far as, sort of slight retcons here and there.
Right, right.
So
this reminds me of like season one of Jessica Jones too.
Yes.
Kilgore is like making her do all this stuff and
Yes. And that actually that makes a lot of sense because Jessica is very affected by what she goes through with Kilgore, and I think similarly Sylvanas is affected by her experience there. Plus there's the whole question, which I think we'll get to, of like what exactly does an undead feel? That as much as she's she may have like some kind of PTSD and whatnot from going through all this, is she even capable of handling those emotions or even really having those emotions to the full extent? So there are questions about that.
Yeah. Well, I will guaranteed like talk at some point about how this reminds me of Lost as well. So.
Oh yes.
I've been hearing that a lot lately when we're recording.
All right. Okay. So moving on.
Right. So as a banshee serving Arthas now, she watches Arthas slay King Anisterion, Sunstrider of the High Elves. She's present when Arthas takes Dalaran, and Dalaran falls. And then she's stationed in Lordaeron for pretty much the rest of the Third War after that. Lordaeron at this time was under Legion control by the three Dreadlords who were sort of the main Dreadlord players during the Third War. There's Varimathras, Belnazar, and Deatharok. And those names will come back throughout Warcraft history. I know Varimathras we just faced in Antorus, and Deatharok shows up in the Rogue Class Hall quest. I don't think Balnazar showed up in Legion. If he did, I missed him. But
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't recall. Yeah. But
I've slept.
But they, since then, so. But they hang around. So. So Arthas, at this time, so Sylvanas is in Lordaeron. Arthas goes over to Kalimdor, and he messes around with Illidan and does some stuff over there. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back, and then he orders, in service to Nerjul, who's the Lich King at this time, he orders all living things killed in Lordaeron. So he only wants undead to be hanging out in Lordaeron. So Sylvanas leads her banshees as they start slaughtering all the human refugees and any other living thing that they find there. They just start wiping it straight out. And so after this, once they've kind of purged Lordaeron of all living things, Illidan separately mounts an attack against the Lich King. And he doesn't quite get to kill him Because he's casting spells, I think, from Dalaran. And so at this point, everybody thinks Illidan's like one of the bad guys. So the High Elves and the Night Elves are all attacking Illidan. And Illidan's trying to hold them off while he's casting his spells at the Lich King, who is just stuck in ice and can't really move. He's a sitting duck. And he kind of realizes, like, I'm stuck here. Something's got to happen to save me. And, of course, the elves are able to stop Illidan. And Illidan's like, you know, of course he's like, oh, you know, you need to be ready to sacrifice more, because that's Illidan's thing. But the end result is that the Lich King survives, but he's severely weakened.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the Lich King is weakened, so too Arthas is weak. And that means that their control over the Scourge is weakened. Mm-hmm. And this is when Sylvanas gains her freedom. She's no longer a puppet. And she realizes that knowing that she's free is a very good secret to have, because now she can plan when she wants to make her move. Right. So she doesn't let Arthas know that she has her free will back. She continues to serve him, but as she does, she's plotting. And at this point, Varimothras reaches out to her that she kind of lets him know that she wants to retake Lordaeron. And so she and Varimothras and the other two Dreadlords, they all plan a trap for Arthas. And so as they're planning this, Sylvanas finds what Arthas did to her body. He took her body after he resurrected her as a banshee, and he put her in an iron coffin and stashed it away. And so she happens to find this coffin with her body, and she's able to put her spirit back into her body, which is nice. Why she looks like a high elf now, an undead high elf instead of a full banshee. So she reclaims her body. She gets her spirit back into it. The Dreadlords ambush Arthas, but he manages to escape their attack. And Sylvanas figured that he would. So she sets a trap for Arthas after he escapes from the Dreadlords. She has her banshees go and kill all of Arthas's bodyguard. And now she's able to ambush Arthas, and she hits him with a paralyzing arrow. And so Arthas is paralyzed, and now he asks for the quick death, and now she declines, because now it's personal for her that she wants to torture him. And so as she starts to torture him, Kel'Thuzad shows up, and he's able to save Arthas, and the two of them get out of Lordaeron, and they go to Northrend and continue on in the quest for the Frozen Throne. So she had Arthas for a moment, and then she lost him, and he got through her fingers. But now she's left, you know, back in her body, and Lordaeron is kind of there for the taking. There's nobody's really holding it at this point, so she's able to start to claim that. But there's general chaos, because there's a power vacuum. There's a general chaos in you know, greater Lordaeron, not just the city, but the area. And the Dreadlords, they want to claim Lordaeron for themselves. And so Varimothras goes back to Sylvanas, and he says, why don't you join with us? You can work for us, and, you know, we'll all take over, and we'll rule happily. And she says, no, she's not working for anybody ever again. You know, she has her freedom. She's not about to give that up. And she goes to war against the Dreadlord. And at this time, so you have Sylvanas leading the Free Scourge. You have the Dreadlords and the Legion. And then you have, you also have Garathos, who's leading like whatever humans are left in the air. And they're all skirmishing around. So first she goes up against Varimathras, and she assembles an army of that she's able to possess, like sort of like the weaker creatures. She assembles an army of ogres, bandits, gnolls, and murlocs. And she takes this army, and she's able to defeat Varimathras. And so he starts begging for his life, and he offers that he can serve Sylvanas and help her against the other Dreadlords. And she's like, okay, I'll take you up on this offer. Because, you know, you'll be useful to me. I can use you to kill the other Dreadlords. If you step out of line, I'll just kill you right there. So Varimathras allies with Sylvanas, and at this point she goes after Dethorok, and she kills Dethorok. And at this point, Garathos, who is now under Dethorok's control, he's freed. So he joins up with Sylvanas and Varimathras. And then the three of them go, and they get Balnazar, who had sealed himself off in the Lordaeron city proper. And at this point, she breaks into the city. She orders Varimothras to kill Balnazar as a test of loyalty, which he does, although not happily and a little reluctantly. But he's able to get Balnazar to kill, Varimothras to kill Balnazar, and then she has Varimothras kill Garathos, because she has no need for him anymore. And at this point, that's when she declares that she's the Banshee Queen, and that or people are the Forsaken, and that they rule Lordaeron, and well, Lordaeron the city, and also now Lordaeron is pretty much the Plaguelands. So Forsaken rule the Plaguelands. She claims the catacombs beneath Lordaeron as her capital, and she calls it Undercity. And that's, you know, sort of the origins of the Lordaeron that we see in World of Warcraft today, that we're going to lose in...
super cool. Because I was playing beta before we started tonight, and man, I don't know, I've done that Lorimar scenario a couple times now, and actually, like, you know, going back to some of this and seeing, like, where it came from, and you're, you know, talking about how she kind of ran everybody out, and, you know... And it's almost the exact same thing that's still happening now, you know, that she's all, you know, I'm not going to give anything away, but, you know, this crazy army of undead with their spraying their plague everywhere. And, like, it's just, like, it's crazy, man. It's, you know, history is just revisiting itself, I guess. So.
Well, yeah, and Sylvanas, I mean, that's one of the interesting things, too, about Sylvanas, is that so often she finds herself... like playing defense, occasionally playing offense. I mean, we'll get to some of, I mean, in this case, she had to, you know, attack Lordaeron, and we'll get to some other times when she's had to do that again. But yeah, but oftentimes she does find herself like having to hold a city, hold a keep. And, you know, the results of that, I think, affect her decisions later on. So, I mean, the biggest one is she couldn't hold Silvermoon. I think that's probably one of, as much as an undead can have regrets, I'm sure that's got to be up there on her list, that she failed as a Rager General.
That makes sense.
Most. So.
All right. So then at that point, she hasn't really pledged loyalty to either faction yet, huh?
No, but she realizes that she needs to, that you know, all the forces that were out there before, she still has the sort of the scourge that's still in the area. You know, they're floating around. She also knows, you know, that the humans and everybody's out there. So she realizes she does need ally. And so first she reaches out to the Blood Elf, since that's where she came from. But they're still traumatized from the initial attack of Arthas, that they just freak out because they don't trust any undead. And so she's like, okay, I'll come back to you guys later. And then she sends emissaries to the Alliance and the Horde. The emissaries she sends to the Alliance never return. There's no record of what happened to them. The emissaries she sends to the Horde, they come in contact with the Tauren, specifically Hemuel Runetotem, who, as the as one of the Arch Druids, he believes that the Forsaken can be redeemed, maybe not physically restored, but at least like they're you know, they can like spiritually be redeemed.
Right.
And so he, you know, he goes to Thrall and says, "You should bring these guys into the Horde." And Thrall, of course, knowing what demonic possession was like, and how you're, you know, as a race, you can have to overcome that. He's, you know, he's very understanding of what Sylvanas and the Forsaken are going through. So he's like, of course we'll bring them in. So he, you know, they welcome the Forsaken in, and because of the Tauren being so friendly towards the Forsaken, that's why there are Forsaken apothecaries under the Spirit Rise and Thunder Bluff, and then you also have some of the Forsaken stationed over in Crossroads, because that's, you know, that was sort of the relations at the time between those two rings.
That's so cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, that's something as a Tauren. I was surprised that the Forsaken were even in Thunderbluff, but I'm like, oh, but now it makes sense.
Makes sense. Yeah. But we didn't find out this. Was it like the last Chronicle that we found out she sent emissaries to the Alliance and the Horde?
I think the Alliance emissary story was from the last Chronicle, because I think that plays into something that's going to happen in Before the Storm or Battle for Azeroth. I think that's one of those little nuggets they put in there to set up a story that they're about to tell.
Gotcha. Cool.
And I don't know the specifics of what we knew before about the exact mechanics of how the Forsaken joined the Horde, but the story always was that it was the Tauren who were friendly to the Forsaken and kind of ushered them in, because they felt they could work with them. And
Katie says we knew about the emissaries a long time ago.
Oh, did we? Okay. Well, maybe she did.
Yeah. There. Perfect. That's exactly. Maybe you knew, Katie.
Yeah. Yeah. She's saying the Alliance killed her emissaries. I think. Yeah. That's the assumption there. It's not in Chronicle. It's not explicitly stated. But yeah. I don't think anybody's thinking that the emissaries just like went off and were like, "Hey, let's just do our own thing."
No, I believe the Alliance are evil like that.
No.
Yeah.
Just because they have Jaina doesn't mean they're the good guys.
New allied race, a group of Forsaken that was originally like three Forsaken, is now actually a whole playable race that has an endless number of people that just play somewhere. But so that sets up Sylvanas in, or sort of the Forsaken as they are in vanilla World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. And Sylvanas, it's funny, you played that clip earlier where Sylvanas says, like, I'm not a night elf, I don't do bouncy.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, her model in WoW was a night elf. There might have been like one or two actual high elves floating around somewhere, but they really didn't have like blood elf or high elf models in the game. So Sylvanas, and I remember like going to Undercity, and the first time I saw her, and she, I was like everybody's all, oh, the Banshee Queen. And I'm like, okay, this person's very important. And then she's even like well hidden in Undercity. Where you get used
down
to
that hallway,
the circle with the hubs. Yeah, and then all of a sudden you find this stray hallway that you go into.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking, like, she's weird. And she had Varimathra standing next to her. So it's like, why is it, I never understood, at least at the time I didn't, now I understand why, but I never understood why you had all these undead people and they're being led by an elf and a demon. Like, that always just felt a little bit odd, but.
Yeah. Hey, man. There you go. Who knew that, however many. What, like 14 years later, it would make sense.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, as a newbie to WoW, like I didn't really play much of Warcraft 3 myself, so I came into WoW through vanilla World of Warcraft, and to get exposed to the lore that way, I had a lot of questions, and I didn't really understand the Forsaken. It's not until much later that I really came to appreciate them. Yeah, so in vanilla World of Warcraft, Sylvanas is, you know, her main concern is Arthas, but she doesn't really do too much. It's not till, even in Burning Crusade, she doesn't do that much, but she is instrumental in bringing the Blood Elves into the Horde that, as I said earlier, she reached out to them the first time and they weren't ready. Now this time she reached out to them as part of the Horde, and, you know, Lorthamar, he realized, like, Kael'thas has been a terrible leader. He's not coming back. We're, you know, kind of stuck out here alone by ourselves. You know, he was more open to having allies, and so, you know, Sylvanas goes to Thrall and says, you should bring these guys in, and Thrall's like, hey, you know, sure, well, you know, a bigger presence over in the Eastern Kingdoms, I'm all for that. So he approves bringing the Blood Elves into the Horde, and then Sylvanas stations a bunch of undead in Tranquillin, in the Ghostlands, formerly Qualus, and that's why when that's why that city is full of undead, because she put those people.
Okay.
So one of the quests, though, once the Ghostlands opened up, Windrunner Spire, the ancestral Windrunner home, opened up. And so players could go there, and if they went there, they found a locket that you were supposed to bring back to Sylvanas. And when you bring it back, you find out that it was a gift from Ilaria to Sylvanas. And at this point, Sylvanas believes Ilaria is dead. She went through the portal.
Right.
She hasn't seen her in forever, so she just assumes that her sister's lost. And when you would bring it to Sylvanas, at first she would act like she didn't really care for it, and she would kind of like throw it, and then right as you were about to leave, then she would pick up the locket, and then she would summon a choir of banshees that would sing the Lament of the Highborn. And so this sort of sets up the one theme of Sylvanas that you see going on later on, is that she doesn't like to show her emotions. And again, as I said, it's not clear as an undead what she's fully capable of feeling, but she doesn't like to reveal that she can even feel as much as she does. So like, she likes to act like, oh, you know, this locket's sentimental and stupid and I don't need this, but no, I do miss my sister.
Confirmed, you know, and Sylvanas is actually Jessica Jones.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think you're going to work that into the title somehow, Jessica Jones. Nice.
So all right. Next.
Yeah, what do we got next?
So next up is Wrath of the Lich King. Again, at this time, Sylvanas gets a new model. I think this is when they finally gave her the first real Sylvanas model that we know. I think they gave her like a modified Blood Elf model in Burning Crusade, where she looked a little more like, well, now she looked like a proper Blood Elf instead of looking like an
Alliance. Right? Yeah.
But she was like just a generic Blood Elf. Well, gray. She was a gray Blood Elf. But now with Wrath of the Lich King, I think this is when they really started to give all the characters their actual like full-fledged character models, their own personal model. Yeah. And so this is when you get the Sylvanas with the hood and the exposed midriff. And so at this point in Wrath, again, her whole thing has been, you know, she wants to get revenge on Arthas and Wrath of the Lich King. That's the expansion where we go after Arthas. So what she does is she orders her Forsaken to start work on a new plague, because the old plague, you know, it was very effective at being destructive. She realizes she needs a weapon. So they start development on, and that's something that you kind of get to see if you play through, I think it's Dragonblight, as a horde. I think Howling Fjord and Dragonblight. There's a little ongoing plot where you're working for the Forsaken Apothecaries. And it's not quite clear what you're working on for them. They keep saying they're doing these experiments and stuff and bringing materials. Mm-hmm. And it's not till later that you kind of realize, like, oh, I was not being very good there.
Yeah, I remember there. It was in Dragonblight. There was this little, this weird little town, like
way on the east side.
They're like, hey, there's this dude like in this cage outside, and it's like, hey, go throw this stuff on him and see what happens. And you're like, okay, you throw it on him, and he just like. Totally brutal poison death right in front of you, and you're like, oh, all right, well, he's dead now.
Yep.
They're like, okay, cool, thanks.
Yeah, I don't want to say that all Forsaken are incapable of having feelings, but I think at the very least there are some Forsaken, and it seems to be the ones who are drawn to being apothecaries. They are ethically challenged. They are very comfortable. They're, you know, if they worked in the makeup industry, they would have no qualms, you know, putting makeup on bunnies and stuff. So that's the kind of Forsaken.
That's quite the analogy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good stuff.
They will test it on animals and people alike.
So Sylvanas, she sends Grand Apothecary Putris up to Northrend. He's the one overseeing all this plague development. And sort of overseeing the Forsaken forces that are up there. And around at this point, the Alliance and the Horde, they're ready to assault Arthas. So they get to Angrimmar, the Wrath Gate, and they mount their attack. And Arthas comes out, and they're going back and forth. And Arthas, you know, he takes out Dranosh. And then just as he's about to go after Bolvar, Putris up at the top of the cliff, you know, he starts yelling out, you know, death to the scourge and death to the living. And they start dropping the plague on everybody and they just kill everybody. And Arthas realizes like, oh man, like I was not expecting this. But the first thing that he says, as soon as he sees Putris throwing the plague, the first thing out of his mouth is Sylvanas. Cause he knows who, well, at least he thinks he knows who's behind this. And to a degree, he's right. So Arthas retreats and, you know, pretty much everybody in that battle is dead. And that, of course, is the great Wrathgate cinematic that really opened up cinematics within World of Warcraft going
on. Yeah. That's kind of around the time that I was really, really getting into playing. So I remember seeing that, just like being like, okay, I'm all in.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's kind of weird because I watched it in preparation for this and.
Nice.
It shows its age. I mean, they've come so far with their cinematics that you can kind of see like, oh, hey, like it's not, you know, it's not up to the quality of today, which makes sense, but it's still, I mean, there's a lot that happens in there, just boom, boom, boom. And then at the end, the dragons show up and they fly in and they just burn everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a good cinematic.
It's very, very cool.
Yeah. It's a good little story. But so as Putris is destroying the Wrath Gate, Varimathras leads an insurgency in Undercity. And Sylvanas is attacked, but she barely escapes, and she flees to Orgrimmar. And so now Varimathras, and it's not quite clear who he's working for at this point, but he and Putris were in league together, and they've claimed Undercity. And so Sylvanas flees to Orgrimmar, and, you know, she and Thrall are like, well, we need to go back. We need to reclaim Undercity. And Jaina shows up, and says, just as a heads up here, Varian blames you guys for what just happened, and he is super pissed. So, you know, if you're going to Undercity, like, just don't get in his way. They kind of agree, like, okay, well, you know, Thrall and Sylvanas are going to lead the Horde, and they're going to take out Varimathras, and Varian and Jaina are going to lead the Alliance, and they're going to take out Putris. And they go, and they do that. And that's when Varimathras... you know, instead, we don't kill Varimathras. He's sucked through a portal, and you hear Sylvanas yelling, or you hear Sargeras. It's not specified that it's Sargeras, but now we know it was Sargeras, like yelling at him. and Varimathras is taken back to wherever the demons are, you know, hold him. And, you know, so Sylvanas and Thrall, they clear their side of the Undercity. Jaina and Varian, they clear their side of the Undercity, and then Varian comes and he's like, no, we're claiming Lordaeron again, and he's ready to go right to war against Sylvanas and Thrall right then and there. And Jaina just freezes him in an ice block and teleports everybody out. So that's how Thrall and Sylvanas, that, you know, are able to reclaim Undercity and then hold it against Varian. And at that point, Thrall's like, you know, he's like, I trust you, Sylvanas, but I don't trust you. So we're just going to put a bunch of Corcoran guards all throughout Undercity, and the Corcoran are just going to be stationed here, and they're just going to make sure everything's cool, that you don't have any more apothecaries like blighting people, because that's bad. Mm-hmm. So at that point, Wrath of the Lich King progresses, and finally we're ready to go defeat Arthas. But before we do, Sylvanas goes to Ice Crown to face Arthas herself, and this is the Halls of Reflection dungeon. She goes in, she finds Frostmourne. When she gets near Frostmourne, she actually feels her wound again and the pain of her death. They get Uther's spirit to come out of the sword. It tells them, like, Arthas is coming and that there must always be a Lich King and all that stuff. And then Arthas shows up and he sucks up Uther's spirit, and then he chases them. Well, Sylvanas actually, like, fights Arthas briefly, but then she realizes, like, Arthas is too powerful, and they have to wind up fleeing from the dungeon. So that's when Sylvanas has the realization that, like, Arthas is too powerful just for the Horde to fight, and that's why the Alliance and the Horde, once again, they get back together and they work together to defeat Arthas properly in Ice Crown Citadel, which Sylvanas was not there for. So once Arthas is killed, Sylvanas goes to Ice Crown and she sees the body, and I believe she sees that Bolvar is the Lich King. And at that point, she goes up to the top of Ice Crown and she's ready to jump off, because to her, her one mission in Unlife was fulfilled. She knows if she jumps off Ice Crown with all the Saronite spikes there, the Saronite will end her existence, and then she'll finally be at peace. And the Valkyr show up and they're like, hey, we kind of need your help. You should not die. And the Forsaken also need you, so do not die. And she's like, no, I'm out. And she jumps off Ice Crown and she impales herself on the Saronite spikes and she died. And she goes to this void place where she has these visions. And she sees a vision of the future where Garrosh is using the Forsaken as cannon fodder, specifically in a failed invasion of Gilneas, but then just in general. And she realizes that the Forsaken are just going to be wiped out without strong leadership. That she's providing at this point. She then finds herself in sort of a dark void where the only emotions she can feel are terror, cold and hopelessness, and fear and regret. And she realizes, like, this is going to be my eternity. She's not at peace. She's suffering in this void. She sees the ghost of Arthas while she's there, and he's just a lonely, scared little boy. And she actually feels a little bit of pity for him, even though, despite all that he did to her. And then as she's realizing, like, I'm stuck suffering all this for eternity, the Valkyr reappear to her, and they make an agreement with her. And they say, we will, let us bond with you, and we will protect you so that you can protect the whole, or protect the Forsaken. And one of the Valkyr takes her place in the void, and she's brought back to life. And there were 9 Valkyr. Now, you know, with one remaining in the void, she has 8 Valkyr at her disposal. And so these 8 Valkyr, she's bonded with, they're there to protect her, they serve her. And Bolvar, being the Lich King, suddenly realizes, like, wait a minute, I just lost the Valkyr. What happened? Who's their new master? But he doesn't realize that they serve Sylvanas. And so now she has this sort of renewed purpose that she needs to protect the Forsaken and lead them, and she has the Valkyr that she's working with to do that. That is what takes her into Cataclysm.
So this last part right here was the whole reason I got the idea that I wanted to do a show on Sylvanas and then Anduin. Because Anduin, I don't know. I didn't know hardly any of his story because I've never really played any Alliance. But Sylvanas, I don't remember that suicide jumping off ICC, but I had heard another podcast mention it. And I was baffled. I'm like, I don't remember this at all. What else about her story don't I even know? Like, it's, I remember none of this. So was this a playable in the game? Like, where did this story part come from?
During Cataclysm, They did a series of leader short stories. Every leader, Garrosh, Sylvanas, Bane, I think even Gallywix, all the racial leaders, and not just for the Horde, the Alliance too. I'm just rattling off the Horde ones.
Okay.
But all the faction leaders got a short story up on the website. And so if you go like under the fiction subheading or the story subheading on the website, it lists all the short stories. And so there's a story for, I know Velen has the story where you find out that the Exodar is supposedly repaired. I think Varian has a story up there. I think it's him and Anduin doing something. So
that's the first time hearing of these, I swear.
So, I don't remember this at all, but yeah.
No, me neither. And
this it's called Edge of Night. This was Sylvanas' short story where she's dealing with the Remnant. Yeah, I mean, some of them, I think, I mean, this one was very, a lot more telling. I think like the Bane story was him like kind of like negotiating with Garrosh about some grain issues, that Garrosh was upset that they weren't getting enough grain from Mulgore. And Bane had to deal with that. So, I mean, you know, it shows, you know, sort of the rigors of leadership, and it showed the strain on the, you know, it showed some of the relationships within that. That it's not like, oh, just because everybody's all, you know, for the Horde, everything's all great. Like, there's some you know, tension there, especially with Garrosh, because going into Mists of Pandaria, that tension was really going to play out. Yep. But here, this was very much a turning point for Sylvanas, because Blizzard could very easily have just been like, you know what? I mean, at this point, she's a lot like Tyrion. I mean, that both of them were very sort of one note, but for them, like killing Arthas was like the main goal. And we saw with Tyrion, like he kills Arthas, and then he doesn't really do anything after that, and now he's dead. Whereas for her, like they're like, okay, like we have this character, and her main purpose is gone. What's driving her? And they use this story as the fulcrum to kind of pivot her character in a specific new direction, because it really sets her up. Like, I mean, before, as much as she was the Banshee Queen, like this really sets her up. Like before she was the Banshee Queen, I think emphasis on Banshee. Now she's the Banshee Queen, emphasis on Queen. That she's really leading her people, you know, and she knows she has a direction. She knows what she wants to do. She's a proactive character, not a reactive character.
Mm-hmm. I believe the term. Well, let's get into Cataclysm then, because I know we still have a good bit here to cover. So, bless you.
I hope I muted myself there. Sorry.
Yeah,
did. Oh
my god! If I hit the wrong button, that's going to sound terrible.
Nice. All right, Cataclysm.
Yeah, so, Cataclysm. So she comes back from Northrend with a renewed purpose, and Garrosh, as she saw in her vision, Garrosh. Wants to invade Gilneas. So he had banned the use of the new plague, which is now called the Blight, but she knows that it's still a potent weapon that she wants to have at her disposal, so secretly she's ordering the Forsaken to be working on that. So she leads the attack on Gilneas. She's able to claim the city. You know, they come in with the boats. This is what you see if you play through the Gilnean starting zone, because it's like the Gilnean starting zone is just chaos, because it's like at one point... Mm-hmm. You go from dealing with the fact that, oh, hey, there's a rebellion, and then all of a sudden you find out there's Worgen showing up, and then now you're dealing with the Worgen. Oh, wait, you're one of the Worgen, and oh, hey, there's an earthquake, and now the Forsaken are off the coast, and they're going crazy. And so she invades Gilneas, and there's one point that's kind of cool where as the Worgen, you have to go hide in a church, and then she comes into the church, and basically it's one of those like villain monologuing type scenes. But the whole thing is that you're hiding there, so she doesn't know that she's monologuing to you, but she basically says, like, you know, this is what we're going to do, this is our plans, and then she leaves, and then you have to go run back and tell everybody what you just saw. But so she shows up there. She's able to claim Gilneas City, and in the process, though, you know, that she's facing off against Gen and his son Liam, and I think also some of the other characters like Darius Crowley. And as she's facing off with Gen, she's ready to shoot him with some of her arrows. And Liam jumps in the way, and he gets hit. He takes the bullet, the arrow for his father, basically. Mm-hmm. And then Liam dies, and then Gen's all super upset. And that really, as much as invading Gilneas would have, you know, created a rivalry between Sylvanas and Gen, Like, this really is what kicks off their hatred.
Yeah, I bet that would do it, huh?
Well, that drives Gen even all through Legion, too, right? Like, that's brought up several times, that whole rivalry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think he even mentions it, doesn't it, in the one where he breaks the lantern? Mm-hmm. I think he even mentions his son.
We'll get to that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, that's the birth of that. So finally, Sylvanas orders Gilneas to be blighted, and the Gilneans realize, well, we can't stay here, so they evacuate. And ultimately, I think SI-7 winds up reclaiming Gilneas, but not quite at that. So Sylvanas, at this point now, she goes back over to Silverpine, and she shows Garrosh the Valkyr and how they can raise the dead. And Garrosh is disgusted by this, and he's like, no, I don't want you doing that. And he picks High Warlord Kromush, an orc, to watch over Sylvanas and basically like report back to him what he's seeing her. And so if you play through Silverpine, you wind up hanging out with Kromush and still Sylvanas for a bit. Mm-hmm. If you play through Silverpine as a low level Forsaken, that's what you see there. So one of the things that she does, is she resurrects Lord Godfrey, one of the Gilnean nobles, one of the nasty Gilnean nobles, because he's a villain even when you encounter him as a Gilnean proper in the Gilnean starting zone. So she resurrects Lord Godfrey, who, after you became a worgen, he jumped off the one cliff. And so he was dead. He washes up somewhere. She resurrects him to help her. And what Godfrey does is he goes off and he captures Lorna Crowley, which is Darius Crowley's daughter. Darius Crowley being the head of the Gilnean resistance, who originally was at odds with Gen, but once Gilneas fell or was under threat to fall, they had reunited. So Lorna Crowley is now, allied with the Gilneans proper. So he captures Lorna Crowley and he brings her to Sylvanas. And then Sylvanas arranges like a hostage exchange at the Greymane Wall. But it's not so much a hostage exchange. What she's doing is she tells Darius to surrender and just walk away. And Darius does. He surrenders and she takes Lorna and then they leave. And Godfrey is not happy about this. And he shoots and kills Sylvanas right then and there. So Sylvanas dies. Godfrey goes off. He goes back to Shadowfang Keep, and that's why he's the boss in Shadowfang Keep. If you go play through that.
Yeah.
And Sylvanas... Exactly. And so Sylvanas now being dead, Kromush asks the Vrykul to resurrect her again, which I don't even think he needed to ask. They were going to do that anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But whereas before it took one Valkyr to resurrect her, this time it takes three.
Oh, wow. So
now she's down to five.
Okay.
But she's resurrected again, and now she heads back to Lordaeron to plot her next move. She next shows up during the Cataclysm in the Battle of Anderhal, where, as a player, you're playing through Anderhal, and the Alliance and the Horde are skirmishing there, and the Alliance is being controlled by Thessarion, the Death Knight. The Horde is under the command of Kul'tira Deathweaver, also the Death Knight, and the two of them, if you play through the Death Knight starting zone, were very good buddies as Death Knight. And now, this is where you get that situation where you have two people who are friends when they're in their class hall, but out in the world, they have to be opponents because they're part of their faction.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're meeting in secret to minimize the number of casualties in the conflict going forward. They're trying to work together because they're buddies. They're friends. You want to see Kul'tira and Thessarion together. You don't want to see them on opposing sides. Sylvanas finds out about this and she goes kind of undercover. And then finally she traps Kul'tira and she's like, no, you're doing this wrong. I'm putting somebody else in charge here. And she takes him and she has this portal show up with these chains and it pulls him back to Undercity. And she's like, yeah, it's time to reprogram you and bring you back all angry and be a better undead. Mm-hmm. So he's pulled away and, we don't find out what happens to him for quite some time. But the speculation is that he's being tortured at that point, tortured and reprogrammed. So that's really it for her in Cataclysm. The next time we really see her show up is in Mist of Pandaria. Well, actually just before Mist of Pandaria, the one thing that, Garrosh, announces his plan to sack Theramore. Sylvanas is opposed to that, and she opposes because she notes that if they sack Theramore, then the Alliance is going to be looking for vengeance, and Lordaeron is just sitting right there in the Eastern Kingdom, okay. And she doesn't want she doesn't want to, you know, poke the bear, basically. She doesn't want anybody coming up there for any reason. So she's against the sacking of Theramore. Obviously, Garrosh overrules her. Not that the Horde was ever a democracy anyway, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but so Theramore is sacked, but the Alliance doesn't attack. The Alliance doesn't threaten to attack Lordaeron. They go after Orgrimmar, but that they don't quite wind up doing. So at this point, you know, as Mist progresses, Garrosh becomes more and more dictatorly terrible ruler, and Sylvanas joins up with the Horde Rebellion under Vol'jin's leadership. So she shows up during the battle against Galakras in the Siege of Orgrimmar. So she's there when you're going back and forth between the two towers.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. When you head from the underground area in Pandaria and you make your way back over to the front gates of Orgrimmar, yeah.
Yes. So she shows up there, and then again she shows up in the end cinematic, basically to just wave at Vol'jin and be like, yeah, I give you my support.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Vol'jin's the war chief now, and Garrosh, Thrall's about to kill Garrosh, and of course Varian's like, no, let's put him on trial, because that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And they hold the trial of Garrosh down in Pandari. So, like, all the faction leaders are down there, and a bunch of other characters too, and Sylvanas goes down there, and while she's down there, she runs into her sister, Varisa. And this is really the first time since Warcraft 3 that she's had any interaction with anybody in her family. And as they get to talking, she starts to feel, like, some kind of attachment to her sister, and she starts to remember how things were. And they do two things. One is they hatch a plan, because they both agree that, like, the trial for Garrosh is dumb. That he doesn't deserve a trial. He's obviously guilty. You know, Varisa is still upset with Garrosh because in the sacking of Theramore, her husband Ronan died. And so neither of them have any love for Garrosh. They want him dead. So they hatch a plan where Sylvanas makes a poison, gives it to Varisa, and then Varisa is going to have that poison put into Garrosh, which she does. Now, the other part of this plan, though, too, is that after they poison Garrosh, Sylvanas says, why don't you come and live in Undercity and we can be a family again? Mm-hmm. And Varisa's like, yeah, I'm cool with this. This sounds great. Although she's not quite sure what to do with her kids because she doesn't want to leave her kids, but at the same time, she doesn't really want her kids living in Undercity. So she's kind of conflicted about that. And then also, what Sylvanas doesn't tell Varisa is like, oh, if you're going to come live in Undercity, probably best if you're one of the undead. So when you come, I'm going to kill you and then resurrect you, and everything will be awesome. So
sounds legit.
Yeah.
I want to say, like, the Sylvanas portion of War Crimes may have been my favorite part of that whole book.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I mean, the stuff between Anduin and Garrosh was cool, and, like, I don't know, it kind of, you know, I definitely respected Anduin a lot more after just the way he handled himself, but, like, I was, like, it just was, like, really interesting, all the stuff with Sylvanas and her, like, reconnecting with her sister, and it seemed like, I don't know, maybe it was just seeing emotion from her again, or, you know, something other than, like, make everything undead, like, it was just pretty cool to see.
Well, and that's really the thing here. Once again, we get this situation where the question is, like, how much emotion can the undead feel, because Sylvanas clearly has feelings for her sister, and she's not quite, it's not clear how strong they are, but they're clearly strong enough that she's like, oh, hey, like, as family, why don't you come to, you know, Undercity with me? Mm-hmm. But it also shows that she's warped in that she's thinking like, oh, I won't tell you that I'm going to kill you, and mm-hmm. this is okay. Like, yeah. It's not, and I know that's the kind of thing where people look at Sylvanas and they're like, oh, see, she's evil, that's evil. And I don't think that's strictly evil. It's
no, it's normal for her. She's been killed three times. And,
like, yeah, I know.
You know, exactly. Or died three times, and, like, at that point, it's just like, yeah, she has an attachment to this person, and it's just like, hey, I can resurrect you. We can rule together. This will be awesome. You know, like,
yeah, her perspective is just very, very warped, and it's wrong. But you can kind of. At least, I don't know, maybe this says something about me. I feel like you can kind of see where she's coming from. I'm not saying what her idea is right, but you can kind of see where she's standing and why she might think this is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. That's totally it. Like, it's not
totally jacked up, but I get it.
Yeah.
She's not being evil and wanting to kill her sister. There's no malice there at all. It's just the way Sylvanas thinks now. And that's how she can be with her sister forever. That's the solution. Yeah, that's her want, to be with her sister forever.
Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, because so often in Warcraft lore, we get a character and they turn evil, and it's, the explanation is, oh, they were corrupted by the old gods, or they were corrupted by something. Mm. And in this case, Sylvanas isn't corrupted. She's wrong, but she's not corrupted, yet the outcome is that she's acting like she's evil.
Or is she corrupted because she was turned into a banshee?
Well, that... yeah, I mean, that's a, I guess, a
I mean, form of corruption. Corruption happened way
before. Yeah, yeah. But she... well, in that case, she's been corrupt for a very long time.
She just...
She just has a very specific worldview, and it's so... like perpendicular to everybody else's worldview that, yeah, when it cuts against the grain, it stands out and it looks, you really like feel that wrongness.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things that when portrayed correctly, it makes her a very fascinating character.
I was just going to say the same thing again. I think that was the highlight of that book for me, honestly, was like, yeah, what happened with her. So,
I don't know, I will always love Bane as Garrosh's defense attorney, but yeah, the Sylvanas stuff was like right there. I mean, I think the fact, because Christy Golden even, you know, was one of the writers on the comic that we'll get to later. I think you can tell she really relished being able to sink her teeth into Sylvanas and Varisa and that relationship and everything going on. And
yeah,
I mean, I think it's one of the reasons that I look so forward to Before the Storm. Because again, she gets to revisit Sylvanas and just really play with that character. And I think that's something that she likes. And I hope that bodes well for Sylvanas. That if Christy Golden likes writing for her, then I hope that, you know, somebody in the Blizzard media is like, and this is where we kill Sylvanas. She's like, no, I got way more stuff to do with her. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a good sign. So Varisa and Sylvanas have this plan. Varisa poisons the food, and then she has regrets. She realizes she can't leave her sons. And she tells Anduin, hey, the food's poisoned. You have to save Garrosh. And so Anduin goes and does that. And, of course, Garrosh then goes on to go full villain at the end of the trial when he just starts spouting all his, you know, everybody's stupid and I hate you all and you're all going to die. And then he escapes and goes back to, he goes back in time to Warlords of Draenor. And we get that whole expansion. And
Anduin's fault.
Sylvanas. Anduin's fault. Well, technically Varisa's fault. But...
yeah, but Anduin's the one that went through.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that dropped the ball. that made Warlords of Draenor happen. So.
Right.
But yeah, so at that point we go back, we go through the portal, and we don't see Sylvanas really until Legion. That she's off doing whatever she's doing in Lordaeron. We're off doing what we're doing over on Draenor.
See, even Sylvanas skipped Warlords.
Oh, no. Like, man, forget this. This is BS.
I'm out of here.
You guys go jack around over there. Forget it. I'm out.
I just assume that they had the voice actress spending the whole expansion practicing that Greymane's forces control this Warden Tower line just so she'd be ready for it when the time came.
Nice.
So going into Legion... you know, Sylvanas is you know, getting her forces ready because, you know, they know, you know, the Legion starts attacking Azeroth. So Sylvanas is like, okay, we have to get ready because we're going to fight the Legion. And one of the things that she does is that she realizes that she needs a good lieutenant, you know, a good second in command with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, and Nathanos Maris, now Nathanos Blightcaller, I believe he was a hunter trainer in Undercity for a while. Mm. You know, he's still with the Forsaken. He hasn't really been doing too much. She basically says, like, okay, like, you're going to be my number two, but if you're going to be my number two, we have to fix you up a little. And the Valkyr can help with that. And so she abducts his cousin, Stephanos Maris, and they do a ritual in Undercity. And it's not quite clear what exactly happens, but it seems that Nathanos either absorbs Stephanos's body, or they're merged together, because I think even Nathanos says like he doesn't quite look the same, but he gets a new body. And this was something that was bugging people at the start of Legion, because they get originally, back as I said, as a hunter trainer, Nathanos looked like a standard Forsaken, and now we get into Legion and he's got this new body and he looks kind of like a person. You know, his skin's very fresh and he looks a lot more alive than he did before. And mm-hmm. so they the story Dark Mirror tells the story there. But the interesting thing is that, again, Sylvanas is expressing feelings towards Nathanos, at least in some sort of, at least in very close kinship, if right. not something more. And even one of the Dark Rangers kind of jokes to Nathanos, like, you know, like, are you guys a couple? Like, what's going on with you guys? And he says, no. He's like, all we feel is rage and contempt. But knowing Sylvanas, who likes to hide her true feelings, it's very easy to think that Nathanos may be doing the same thing, that he's not openly admitting, like, but yeah, there's something. And this is once again an example of the Windrunner children all having some kind of relationship with a human.
Well, we know that, you know, you see with Varisa that, you know, Sylvanas still does have feelings and emotion, and, you know, and her relationship with Nathanos goes way back before, you know, before all this stuff. So there's probably something there. We have no idea what that is, you know. I can't remember the Dark Mirror well enough. I
don't know if I ever read it.
I don't think that really gave you any, if I remember correctly, that really didn't give you any, like, indication as to their relationship either. But, you know, they definitely, it's more than just, you know, he's undead and she's in charge, you know. There's way more history than that there. So.
Well, I think there's a few questions about what exactly a relationship between undead looks like. But even then, I mean, because there were speculation that the two of them were hooking up back, you know, back before Warcraft 2. And so here they are, here they are again now, you know, working together very closely. And, you know, I think part of it, too, could just very well be the nature of people to gossip about the people that they're around. Even though everybody's undead, they mm-hmm. still have that gossipy nature to them. And so, of course, you see two people like that hanging out or, you know, getting along. Yeah, you're going to talk, even if nothing can possibly happen because they're also undead. I think it just, you know, leads to, you know, the Dark Rangers just kind of gossiping amongst them.
Yeah, Katie says in the short story, it's implied that they had to spend the night at Nathanos' house.
Yeah.
A sleepover.
So, there's some kinship. But
undead don't need to sleep, so.
But the one thing about this, though, too, is I think it's, there's sort of, at least I got the implication that this was a bit of a reaction to what happened with Varisa, that by, like, feeling something for Varisa and then being spurned, She reached out for the next closest relationship that she could find, and that would have been Nathanos, since, again, all her family, I mean, Varisa at this point was the only family member she had left, and, you know, so she reached out to Nathanos, and she started to rekindle that relationship, even if he's only full of rage and contempt and just serving as lieutenant, you know, there's still, she's still looking for something, there's something unresolved in here, she's not straight up cold and, you know, sort of unfeeling, and there's still a spark in her that I think is going to be interesting to trace, you know, what that leads to down the line. So,
yeah, so there's definitely some stuff coming up in Battle for Azeroth.
Yes.
But so, we started to talk a little bit earlier, though, about the Greymane stuff and how there was a whole piece of that in Stormheim. So,
before we get to Stormheim, though, we get to the Broken Shore. And she leads, I guess, what's the second wave of the assault on the Broken Shore, the first wave, I think, having been Vol'jin and Bane and a few other of the Horde characters, because that's the Legion opening cinematic where, you know, she and Varian, they crash the airship and then they start fighting up the Broken Shore. And then we show up as players to work with them, and we work our way up. And, you know, and so we get up to the, you know, the climax of the Broken Shore when everybody's at the temple of, or the Tomb of Sargeras, rather, and the Horde is up on the ridge, and then they get overrun, and Vol'jin gets stabbed, and he tells Sylvanas, you know, the Horde will not die this day, and then she blows the horn, and the Valkyr start pulling everybody out of there, and then they retreat, and then, of course, that leaves Varian to get all greedy and explode. And the Alliance blames her for Varian's death, and Vol'jin, of course, is mortally injured, so they retreat back to Orgrimmar, and then before he dies, he says, you know, the Loa, they told me one name, Windrunner. And so there's that great cinematic where Vol'jin, you know, announces her the next war chief, and then he passes, and then you see the time pass and that little lapse is, you know, they're moving his body out there, and she's just standing there stunned that she can't, like, she's stuck processing, like, I'm the war chief. What just happened? And then the first thing that she does is she, you know, they burn Vol'jin's body because obviously she of all people knows you don't leave a body around because who knows what can happen with it. And, you know, so they burn Vol'jin's body, and then she has that moment where she basically rallies the Horde and she says, you know, we're gonna beat the Legion. We're going to do it for Vol'jin. We're going to do it for the Horde. And I have to say that, you know, that as somebody who was very reluctant to take Sylvanas on as the leader of the Horde, that she is very good at giving those motivational speeches, and she knows exactly when to rally the troops. And mm-hmm. I don't know if Blizzard's necessarily intentionally meaning to do it in that fashion, but I think that's one of the things that makes her such an effective general, is that she knows when the troops need that little kick in the pants, boost the morale, and she's really able to come through and give it to them. So, I mean, as I said, it took me a while to kind of come around to her being the war chief, but that was one of those moments where I'm like, okay, you know, maybe I can see myself, you know, getting on her side here. Maybe she's not all evil and terrible and everything. I think I can work with her. And, you know, of course, you know, jumping a little bit ahead here, of course, the Battle for Azeroth cinematic, when that for the Horde, mm-hmm. when all of BlizzCon, I mean, that's just, if that didn't, you know, get you waving the Horde banner, you know, as a Hordey, you know, obviously as Alliance, you probably didn't like it, but as a Horde member, if that didn't get you waving the Horde banner, like, nothing will, you know, and you should go join the Alliance. So, you know, so at this point now, she's the War Chief, and the first thing that she does as the War Chief is and this is something that I never understood, she summons you back to Orgrimmar so that you can ride with her to Stormheim when you were already there. And so you go to Stormheim with her, and then Gen is in Stormheim, and he sees that Sylvanas is showing, you know, he sees the Horde fleet showing up, and so he orders he orders an attack on them, mm-hmm. and your ship crashes, and Sylvanas disappears. And so you're kind of working with Nathanos, and you really have, like, there's two plots in Stormheim. You have the one plot to get the Aegis of Aggrimmar, but then you have the other plot of, like, well, where's Sylvanas? We have to track mm-hmm. Sylvanas. What's she doing? And you wind up following her into Helheim, where you wind up facing off with Helya, or not really facing off with Helya. You wind up encountering Helya. Mm-hmm. But before you do, like, the person in line in front of you to meet Helya is Sylvanas, and you see that she meets with Helya and then she leaves. And you're like, well, that was weird. Like, what was Sylvanas doing here? Mm-hmm. What was she meeting with Helya about? And then you follow along, and as you're going after the Aegis of Orgrimmar, or the Aegis of Aggrimmar, you head over into towards the Halls of Valor, and you wind up, when you get to the point where you're about to claim the Aegis, and Sylvanas is there, and and Gen's there too, and you find out that she's there with this lantern that she got from Helya, and she's trying to take control of Aeir, and Aeir is Odin's like Odin's, not servant, but she's like the head, like, Valkyr, basically.
That
she's there to turn people into Valkyr. If you actually, when you play through the Halls of Valor dungeon, there's actually the one, you interrupt the one Valkyr ceremony, mm-hmm. where they're about to turn the one shield maiden into a Valkyr. And so Sylvanas clearly wanted the ability to make more Valkyr, because if the Valkyr can make more Forsaken, and then if she can make more Valkyr, then she never has to worry about running out of Valkyr to make Forsake.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite clear what exactly the deal was that she worked out with Helya, and it's not even clear if that deal matters anymore, since Helya gets killed in the Trial of Valor dungeon.
Right.
But Sylvanas very clearly wants control of Aeir so she can make more Valkyr, mm-hmm. and Gen shows up, and he's basically like, no, you killed my son, now I'm going to kill your children, or, you know, lack of a better analogy. Mm-hmm. And they have that awesome shot there where Aeir's in the middle, and then you have Sylvanas on the one side and Gen on the other. It looks like the start of a fighting game. Mm-hmm. Like, you just need, like, the little bars, like the health bars over the top of everybody. Mm-hmm. And Sylvanas jumps up and she shoots her arrows at Gen, and Gen takes the arrows to the chest, but somehow he still managed to grab the lantern, and he breaks the lantern, and then he gets out of there, and then he's pretty much out of commission for a little bit while he's healing up, and Sylvanas is lost because now she no longer, you know, her goal of getting Aeir to control the Valkyr is no longer possible. So she's out of luck. And that's...
I imagine Odin's pretty pissed at her at that point too, but I don't know if that ever comes up.
Well, who, Aeir?
Odin.
Oh, Odin?
Yeah.
I don't think... Odin probably should be pissed at her. I don't think Odin cares. I think Odin... Odin knows that he's powerful enough that even if Sylvanas like came at him, I mean, I think he would just mm-hmm. assume he'd just stomp her. I mean, look at what he does for fun. He gets into fights with us. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think. I mean, I don't even know if he was aware of what happened there, even though he's like right outside.
He might not.
Because I think it's right after that, then he shows up. And that's, I think, right after that is when you find out that Havi was Odin. But yeah, he's doing his own thing. We're going to have to fight him at some point, but that's another episode.
Yeah, I don't know. He's kind of a jerk, but.
Yep.
All right. So I think. At that point, you don't see a whole lot else in Legion, actually, right?
No.
It like, kind of boils down to the Gen and Sylvanas conflict in Stormheim, and then everybody kind of goes home, and then we move into Argus and push mm-hmm. forward with Velen and Illidan and Dadgar to finish that up. So.
Right, and the only notable thing from Argus that relates to Sylvanas' story is that's where we find Alaria Windrunner, still alive after all these years, somehow having lived, well actually I guess she's an elf, so living for 1,000 years isn't that big a deal, but somehow she had lived for 1,000 years in the span of 20 years.
Mm.
But so we find Alaria, we get that moment on the Vindicar when Alaria and Varisa finally are reunited. And then Alaria's like, so what about our sister? What's going on with Sylvanas? And Varisa's like, yeah, let me speak to you in private about that. there's stuff what has you happened. Have to.
Yeah. Nice.
So going into Legion, I'm not quite clear, or going into Battle for Azeroth, I'm not quite clear what the order is here, because we have the prologue from Before the Storm, uh-huh. where she's preparing for the victory parade, even though she didn't really do anything in Legion to actually fight the Legion because she was so busy with her own agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do see Sylvanas one other time in Legion, right at the end after Sargeras. Sargeras is defeated and sticks his sword into Silithus. There's that little cinematic after we go there with Gallywix goes and talks to her about something.
Oh, the Azorite.
I think that that's going to be in Before the Storm because in the prologue, she's getting ready for the victory parade in Orgrimmar. Mm-hmm. And then that was the victory dinner in Orgrimmar. So I think that she was getting ready for the parade and then there's the parade because the other part of the prologue was there were goblins that were discovering the Azorite in Silithus.
Mm-hmm.
And so those goblins are going to get that. Get the Azorite over to Gallywix, who's then at the dinner going to give it to, you know, shows it to Sylvanas.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so what happens is I think that, you know, as she's getting ready for the parade, she mentions that her plans are to attack Stormwind. And then once the parade actually starts and they get to the dinner, and I think that's when Gallywix is going to show her the Azorite. And I think that's going to completely change her plan.
Oh, okay.
We'll see how that all plays out in mm-hmm. Before the Storm. So. That's that cinematic there. That's the prologue. Really, the only thing of note there is that everybody just disrespects Gallywix. That, I mean, Sylvanas even looks kind of bored during the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you know, Nathanos is kind of keeping himself, and you have Sorfang and Bane talking, and then Gallywix shows up. And at that point, Sylvanas, like, her attention perks up a little bit, and she meets with Gallywix privately. But even then, she's impressed by the Azorite, and I think I guess... Even without knowing what it is, she could at least sense its power, and she knows this is something.
Yeah.
This is something that we need. This is something mm-hmm. to be wielded.
Yeah.
So she's ready for that. And so finally, we can talk about the Windrunner reunion comic. And I guess this actually takes place before the prologue. There, now that I think about it.
Okay. Before the
parade in Orgrimmar. Again, it's a little bit unclear when all these things happen. So
yeah.
So sometime after the victory on Argus, you know, but before that victory parade in Orgrimmar, the three Windrunner sisters agree to meet at Windrunner Spire, which again, that's where as a Horde player, you can find the locket to give to Sylvanas.
Okay.
You know, in the Ghostland. And what's notable is that locket was apparently one of a set that originally that their mother, Larissa, had a like 3-gem necklace and she gave it to Alaria. Alaria broke it up and made took each of the gems and put them into a separate locket, and then each one of the three sisters kept one of the lockets.
Oh, okay.
So and that's something too. I think in War Crimes, there's even a scene where she and Verisa are each have their lockets, and they're showing them and talking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the necklace that they were talking about in the comic then, because they made a point of mentioning it, but I'll be honest, it didn't mean anything to me. I didn't know the backstory to what it was. I'm like, okay, well, they're porting this out, but there's got to be a reason. But yeah, I didn't mm-hmm. know what it was. So awesome.
So in the comic, we get, Verisa and Ilaria, they're the first to show up in Ghostlands. And at this point, there's a bunch of scourge between them and the Spire. And then finally, so they start reminiscing before they head off. And then Sylvanas shows up. And she kind of startles them at first because she just shows up out of nowhere without really properly greeting herself. And it's interesting because you get to see, despite the fact that Sylvanas is the war chief, and Ilaria is all voidy, and mm-hmm. Verisa is the last remaining high elf. Despite all that, they just start acting like a family again. They're very friendly with each other, not familiar. They're very familiar mm-hmm. with each other. Mm-hmm. They call each other Little Moon and Sun and stuff. And they have their names. What I thought was interesting is that they play that game. The everybody's gonna say three statements. One of them will be a lie. And we'll share our lies when we get to the Spire. And of course, I'm thinking clearly this is Sylvanas is up to something here. This is a little too gamey.
Yeah. She's just trying to fish for some sort of information or to take a temperature, see where people are at, I guess.
Well, even then, I mean, her whole her three lies, her third statement was I would never betray my two sisters or something like that, and you're like, well, of course that's the lie. I forget what the other two statements were, but that was one of those moments where Sylvanas ventured into almost cartoon villainy a little bit. That was just so obvious. Okay. But yeah, she's twirling a mustache while she's saying that.
Yeah.
But so that, so they fight their way through. I thought that was kind of funny too, because watching the three of them fight through the Scourge, it felt a lot like if you went there as a level 100 or whatever character. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
you don't really have to kill the mobs there, but it's just get out of my way. I'm mm-hmm. coming through here. So yeah, because you can't even fly in Ghostlands, so you would actually. But so they get their way to the Spire, and then they have their little moment. And she gets into a bit of an argument with Ilaria, and then finally they're all ready to leave. And then Verisa apologizes for her betrayal back in Warcry. She says, I left you with a letter. I shouldn't have done that. I should have told you. And at that point, Sylvanas, who had the ambush set up, ready to call in her Dark Rangers to take out her sisters, doesn't call them in. She lets her sisters go. And it's that classic thing again where she has feelings for them. She's not really ready to kill them. She does love them, but she doesn't want to admit it. And even then, one of her Dark Rangers are like, you have feelings for them? She's like, no, I'll still kill them someday. They'll serve me someday, but it doesn't have to be now. And it's like, yes, sure, you're never, if you haven't pulled the trigger now, you're never going to pull that. So mm-hmm. again, it's one of those things, it kind of undercut the cartoon villainy a little bit. Like, I think it would have been, if she was so obvious about setting the trap and then sprung the trap, I think it would have been okay, that's a joke. The fact is she was overly obvious in setting the trap because she wasn't going to spring the trap. I think that worked a little bit better as the story. I enjoyed
it. Makes sense. Well, I guess that's kind of it for everything that we have in game so far, right?
Yeah, there are a few other appearances here or there. I think she showed up in one of the mangas and did, but there was nothing that had any real significance on her character.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So yeah, she's one of those characters, I think, especially before she became War Chief, where it was like, oh, hey, we're doing a story here. We want a big lore character to show up. Who's available to use? And I feel like she was at that right level of fairly big, but not too big. If Thrall kept showing up every time, you're like, well, doesn't he have better things to do? But it's like, well, so she's just leaving the Forsaken. She could show up. She could do what she wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think in that result, I think, and I think, especially earlier on, I feel like lately, because she's been, her actions lately have kind of been so evil in some regards that there's a bit of a backlash to her. I think a little earlier on when she was a little nicer, I guess, for lack of a better term, I think she was more of a fan favorite. I think now there are some people that are tired or wish that her behavior would change. But yeah, so I think as a result, she got, you know, she got pulled down from the shelf and thrown here or there. I think she appears in like Storm Rage. She's one of the characters shown having the terrible dreams. So it's small stuff like that that doesn't really push her story forward.
Yeah, exactly.
She's just kind of there.
Right. All right. I know we're running a little long here, but you did mention, I see in the notes here, you've got Hearthstone and Heroes of the Storm. Is there anything you want to just add quickly about those?
She's actually the one hero that I've actually purchased in Heroes of the Storm. So, but she does have some interesting skins. You can play her as the old elf, like the before she's died as an elf. Mm-hmm. You can play her as like
the Ranger General. Yes, the Ranger General.
Yeah.
You can play her as like the exposed midriff Sylvanas when she was just leader of the Forsaken, or you can play her as Warchief Sylvanas, like the new thing there. She does have mind control. I think that's what's interesting is in both games, she has a mind control ability where she can possess stuff. So,
you can also, she's got the Chinese New Year skin too.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. So,
yeah, her and Jaina both. So it actually works really well. They both look like they're like servers at a Chinese restaurant. So,
in a lot of ways, I think she's. It seems like the same way like around Cataclysm, like her story pivoted, Jaina's story pivoted at the same time, and I think a lot of people kind of feel the same thing. Like if you're a Horde member and you look at Jaina and how hostile she's been towards the Horde, you're like, that's a future raid boss. And if you're an Alliance member and you look at just the depravity of some of Sylvanas' actions, like just, you know, blighting everything and turning everything undead, you look and you're like, that's a future raid boss. And it feels like the two of them, I mean, even then, like when, like, as we mentioned in the Halls of Reflection, you know, like Sylvanas is there for the Horde. It's Jaina when you play it as Alliance, and, the Galakras fight, you know, Sylvanas is there for the Horde, but Jaina is one of the people that's there for the Alliance. If, you know, when you play that side of it. So the two of them really kind of feel like they're not quite moving directly in parallel, but I feel like they're kind of orbiting each other in a way that as Sylvanas gets more power and gets more protective of her people, Jaina is getting more hostile towards the Horde. And it does feel like there's some sort of like collision point between these two that's coming. And maybe that happens in Before the Storm. Maybe that happens sometime in Battle for Azeroth. I mean, we'll have to see when. I mean, my pet theory is always that they're going to be, my pet theory is that they're both going to be like a raid boss together, but that wouldn't be for, I have no idea how that,
nice. But
yeah, it feels like the two of them, their stories aren't quite mirroring each other, but there's a shared destiny.
Yeah. They're escalating kind of on the same path, just in their own way. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. Yeah. All right, Daryl, did you have any other Sylvanas
questions? I don't think so. That was good. That was very in-depth. That was actually really good, though.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I still learned a lot of stuff like I didn't know. Like, there's just so many things about lore that I just don't know. I've been playing this game for, like, what, 14 years now? And I don't know a lot of the story still, like, there's little stuff like this. So, yeah, this was good. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to go over all that. I mean, I learned a lot in preparing for this too. And
nice.
I mean, so Sylvanas is one of those characters. I mean, she, you know, having been around since Warcraft 3, she's coming up on, you know, being almost what 18 years old now, 20 she's years old. I mean, she's now. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, tell Nathanos that. But it's one of those things where it's like the fact that she became Warchief worries me because, well, maybe it shouldn't, because I mean, Thrall stepped down from Warchief and he's still around. Just as, after seeing the last few Warchiefs get taken out
like, you know, he had a kid, and I don't think Thrall was ever on this like path of like must crush everything, get out of my way, if you're not Horde then I'm, you know, like, you know, Garrosh took that to the extreme and Sylvanas is taking it to the extreme. She's just a little more cunning about it, I think. Like, I don't know.
Well, the thing about Sylvanas and Garrosh, because everybody is like, oh, it's Garrosh 2.0, it's Garrosh 2.0, and it's not. it's I mean, it's, at a cursory glance, they're both very hostile, mm-hmm. and they're both, you know, they're both mm-hmm. very militaristic, but they had very different motivations. That Garrosh just wanted sheer domination, and even then, within the Horde, he only, you know, respected certain races and certain members. That he, you know, that he was kind of almost would have implemented like a caste system within the Horde. I mean, like the whole like the troll and goblin area being like a ghetto, mm-hmm. that, you know, and even the Forsaken really only using them as cannon fodder. It was really only the Tauren and the orcs that he had any respect for. Right. Whereas Sylvanas, she appreciated and understood that she needed to lead the Forsaken. And now that she's in charge of the Horde, I think that's what's telling about her standing there, you know, kind of shocked when Vol'jin dies. It's that she realizes, like, I was just coming to grips with the fact that I have to lead this one group of people and mm-hmm. what I have to do to make sure that they're protected and they have a future. And now I have to do that for all the Horde, that I'm responsible, not just for the Forsaken, but also for the Orcs, also for the Tauren, also for the Goblins, also for the Trolls, that I think that's the realization that was setting in. And I think if there's one thing that her undead nature gives her, it's a certain type of pragmatism that the other characters can't have, because, like, mm-hmm. where, I mean, that's one of the things that she's, I don't want to get in like any spoilers for what's going to happen, but I think she like I said, she lost Silvermoon. And now you're putting her in a position she has to defend Lordaeron again.
Mm-hmm. And
she knows, gotcha. You know, she, you know, even then, like before, she went all out as best she could, you know, one-on-one combat with the, you know, with Arthas, and she lost, but she, mm-hmm. you know, she laid it all on the line then, and I fully expect she'll do the same thing again to, you know, make the best decisions that she can as far as, you know, pulling out all the stops to protect her land. You know, she's very much one of those, you know, what's the saying? A dead player does no DPS. and I think she understands that, as far as, you know, she was a proper raid leader. She would understand that and be like, no, you know, keep everybody alive so they can keep doing their damage. I don't mm-hmm. want anybody dead, because that doesn't help
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
I think that as a Horde member, I felt like Garrosh only viewed you for what you could bring to the Horde, like what you could do for him. Like, can you fight in his army? Okay, great. Well, what's your role within that battle? And if you have no role, or if you're useless, then you're cannon fodder and you're used to him. I think Sylvanas actually understands, like, no, as a leader, I need to lead and protect, and everybody has some sort of value, and we all do this together. And I think I think that she can be a bit more inspiring and a bit more.
Well, Justin is kind of relating her to Negan from The Walking Dead.
In a way, yeah. In a way,
yeah. Where he's like, yeah, I'd do it my way. If not, it's really going to suck for you.
Well, and again, I mean, you find, compare her to Negan, I mean, they're both leaders who are in very dire situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sylvanas especially, I mean, coming up, you know, with the chaos that was, you know, Lordaeron becoming the Plaguelands, and, you know, like, scrounging for allies and you know, basically clawing her way to where she is now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I mean, Negan being in the middle of a zombie apocalypse. So it's really, well, I guess Lordaeron is a zombie apocalypse in its own right. So really, they are this.
Mm-hmm. See? Yeah. So all of these stories that are coming out are just ripping off Warcraft.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. Yep.
So nice. Is Anduin Carl then?
Gosh, probably, yeah.
All right.
Does that mean Anduin's going to die? We can only hope. So, all right. Well, if you haven't already, make sure you come and join the official Training Dummies Discord server at discord.me/TTD. It's the best way to keep in touch and get real-time interactions with us and our community, as well as the awesome guests like Nick that you have heard here on the show tonight. That's discord.me/TTD. And since we are streaming live shows, and hopefully we do get those bugs worked out soon, head on over to twitch.tv/thetrainingdummies and give us a follow so you know when we fire up the stream.
It seems fate has brought us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
All right, Rob, what do you got?
everybody who showed up tonight, and then is this the same thing I said last week? Everybody who showed up and how was so. Patient because we were trying to figure out what the heck.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's the thing. I should just make a script out of it at this point. But yeah, that definitely Nick, man. Thank you so much. I know you put a lot of your own time and energy into kind of getting the story together and straightened out and everything. So thank you so much, Nick, for that.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm sorry my voice couldn't hold out a little bit better there. It got weak at some points.
No way. It's perfect.
No, it's all good.
Perfect. Daryl, of course, for helping keep the train going. And yeah. Daryl, what do you got, man?
Ditto? I think I tried that last week too. But yeah, Nick, thanks for coming on. This was great. I know I want to do a show on Anduin and Sylvanas. My first thoughts were, well, I've got Torn and Goblin there. There's two of them. I got two lore characters here. I'm going to hit them up and see where we go. And I'm glad I did both last week, Katie with Anduin, and this week, you doing Sylvanas. It worked out really good. And I really appreciate both of you taking the time to, do a little extra research on these and come and relay the story that I miss when I play the game. Because I don't know. It's just what happens.
I even know the story, and I still miss it when I play the game. I'm like, wait, did I do that quest? How do I not? Yeah, it gets by you sometimes.
Yeah,
I have a lower. Well, it's not lower level. It's level cap team, but a team that I haven't touched in quite a while on another server. And I bounced over there earlier to check some stuff out, and I was like, man, I don't remember doing this at all. And it's like current Legion content, mind you. This is like my 15th or 16th. Next level character that I've run through Argus, and I'm doing it again now. I'm like, I don't think that's. Did I do this before? What the heck is this?
I mean, anyway, so thank you again. Nick, do you have shout outs this evening?
We'll want to shout out to everybody over at Mash Those Buttons, especially Katie and Ray and Eric, my podcasting partners there. And also, I want to give a shout out to my wife, who has been doing an awesome job. She's pregnant with our second kid, and so she's been soldiering on through that. So I just want to give her a shout out. The hard work she's been putting in being pregnant, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Growing a person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, all right. Before we wrap this up, Nick, where can people reach you if they have any questions or just want to get in touch with you and say thank you for all the awesome input?
Best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter at WookieBH. They can also go over to mashthosebuttons.com for information about WoW Talk and the Torn and the Goblin, and also the MashCast, which is our general gaming podcast. They should be able to find those on most podcasting platforms. We're on a whole bunch, like Stitcher, Player.fm, and Pocket Cast, iTunes, and all that stuff. Pretty much wherever you find your other shows.
All right. Well, that wraps up episode 211 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and thetrainingdummies.com. And remember, we are all just jackasses with mics. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust.
Woo-woo!
From people you shouldn't.
Woo-woo!
So forget what I said before. Now is when things are getting weird.
Woo-woo! Oh, a fan, huh? Oh, well, who can blame you?
For all the love and support
at patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Perhaps you require more training,
dummies.
Uther.
I'm not dignifying that with a response.
Look, there's a little note.
patreon.com/trainingdummies
has not been evaluated by the FDA. Please do not operate large machinery or mythical creatures after healing. Side effects may include nausea, dimensional displacement, stomach irritation, and sentient discharges. Always consult a doctor before using
patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Was that not enough jokes? Were you not entertained?